I started running when I was 36, and total vanity, I wanted thinner legs. And somebody told me the best way to get thin legs was to take up running. So that's exactly what I did. So it's awful, isn't it?
Diz Runs Radio, episode 455, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, today's episode of the show is sponsored by Pro Compression, makers of some really high quality, really useful recovery gear. The compression socks, compression sleeves, compression tights, compression. Whatever your compression needs are, Pro Compression has definitely got you covered in a variety of different colors and designs and all kinds of things. So head over to the website, procompression.com, check it out, and make sure you use the code DIZRUNS at checkout so that they know you came from the show. And also, so you can save 40%, because who doesn't want to get some compression gear at almost half price? I mean, it's almost too good to be true. But anything in the cart, save 40% using the code DIZRUNS. So thanks to Pro Compression for their continued support of the show. And now, let's go ahead and get on with today's episode. Hey guys, my guest today is an incredible runner, which is kind of probably going to be an understatement. You'll figure out that why in just a second. But she also has multiple world records to her name, which is just the tip of the incredible iceberg. Her list of achievements is really probably too long to count. But a few of the highlights include a double Badwater, a double Comrades, a double Spartathlon, and several other finishes, wins, and records on courses where she's just done the quote-unquote single event, as if, you know, running just Badwater isn't bad enough. You know, just do a double. But whatever. We'll get into all that as we go. But also, kind of more timely to what's going on right now, she's getting ready to head out on a trip across the United States, running from coast to coast. And I'm really excited to hear about that and you know, some of her history and a whole lot more. And I'm looking forward to chatting today with Ms. Mimi Anderson. So thanks for joining us, Mimi.
Hi, nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, the pleasure is certainly mine, and I'm glad you're able to fit us in for a little chat today. And like I said, looking forward to getting into some of the past, some of the present, and maybe even some of the future as we go along here. But guys, if you want to check out Mimi's website and find out all the things she's doing, the incredible accomplishments she has under her belt so far, the website is marvelousmimi.com, and it's the UK spelling there of marvelous. So it's two L's, marvelousmimi.com is the website. And I know it was trying to autocorrect on me, so make sure you get that second L in there or you will not find it. And the Instagram and Twitter handles are the same as well. And it's just the same as the URL, at marvelousmimi. Again, two L's for marvelous. And we'll have all those links to connect to Mimi and what she's got going on and maybe a few highlights from her past as well. And whatever else we talk about that makes sense to link to in the show notes today, which you can find at dizruns.com/455. So, Mimi, the way we start off the show is with a simple question, and I honestly have no idea where you're going to go with this answer, which is part of the fun for me, because sometimes I can kind of have a pretty good idea, and sometimes I'm really at a loss, and I'm at a loss today. But the question is simple. We'll see what the answer is. The answer may be simple for you. I don't know. But it's just to simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
That's a difficult one. I think for me, the longer, the better. So 50 milers for me, absolutely way too fast. I like 100 miles, but, now that I'm getting older, 100 miles is, I'm sort of competing against people who are in their sort of late 20s and 30s. And, I'm 55. Mm-hmm. So, I can do quite well, but I'm not up there with sort of the top guys. So now anything really sort of over 100 miles and I tend to find my sort of, my rhythm is slightly better. So, yeah, the longer, the better for me.
Oh, goodness. I laugh every time I talk to ultra runners in general, but certainly those that are in that 100-mile category and beyond, when they say that, just a 50K or just a 50-miler, that's just too fast for me. And I've done one ultra so far to date, a 50K, and it was a slog, but I enjoyed it, and I will certainly do more in the future. But The idea of fast in 50K still is a completely foreign concept to me.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's just ridiculous, isn't it? I remember sort of, you know, doing my very first, I mean, this isn't an ultra, obviously, but, you know, my very first 10K. And, you know, at that stage, I'd only just started running, but I went out and I just thought, my goodness, people are going so fast. Why are they running so fast? And it's the same with the 50 miler. People go off at the rate of knots. I mean, they are running 50 miles in just fantastic time. So I am sticking to the way the longer distance, much, much better for me. You know, I don't have to be so fast, but I think you just need to be more consistent. And it's time management. It's looking after yourself much more, which I'm better at. So that's what I'm going to stick at, I think.
Gotcha. I definitely want to get into some of that, the mindset and things like that you have going into some of these longer races. But I would be curious. I mean, how did you get started in running? Was that something that has always been part of your life, or where did you come on to the running scene, if you will?
No, at school I was a team player, so I played team sports at school. We didn't. This is back in the dark ages. So my school didn't actually have athletics until 1980, and by which stage I'd left school. So, you know, I didn't have any opportunities to do anything like that. So I started running when I was 36, and total vanity, I wanted thinner legs. Mm. And somebody told me the best way to get thin legs was to take up running. So that's exactly what I did. So it's awful, isn't it? It's quite...
It worked out well for you, though.
Yeah, it did. I'm not sure I've ever got my thin legs, but, you know, because as a runner, you tend to get more muscly legs, right. But that's fine. It's, you know, it got me onto, you know, this fantastic journey that I've been very lucky to experience. So I'm very privileged.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, just like I said, just from looking at the highlights, scanning through the website for just a couple minutes, you can tell that it's been quite a journey. When did you start to realize that... That maybe going longer was more suited for you? Did that take a while, or did you stumble upon that pretty quickly into the time as a runner?
I think I probably stumbled across it. When I first started running, you know, again, this is quite embarrassing, given that, you know, nowadays, but I didn't even know what a half marathon was or a marathon was. I didn't even know that those race distances existed, because, you know, back then you didn't see people running in the street, you didn't see people with backpacks, you know, it wasn't on TV as much. So, you know, the sort of the running world as such, or athletics, wasn't sort of around quite as much. So for me, I think the whole point is sort of getting into running once I then discovered that actually it was quite a nice sport and actually I quite enjoyed it. It was more the adventure side. So when somebody suggested that, you know, let's go and do the Marathon des Sables, for me, that was an adventure. You know, I had three children, and I remember thinking, this is so outside my normal life to go out to the desert to race for 7 days, camping and, you know, sweating and being smelly and racing. And I just thought, my goodness, how exciting is that? So I think that was the beginning. That's really how I sort of got into it. And then I progressed from there and discovered that actually the longer I went, the better I was.
Mm-hmm. Were there reservations with that first trip to Marathon des Sables? I mean, was that something that you struggled with doing? Like you said, you had kids at home. I mean, or was it a pretty easy choice for you at that time?
No, it wasn't easy. I had to, you know, good, bear in mind, I was a stay-at-home mum. Mm. So my husband he used to go and work in London. And so I think it was more of a shock for him, actually, than it was for me. So I had to sort of persuade my husband that it was a good idea. I think it's quite good to actually go and have time. I think as women, sometimes we feel guilty about leaving our children and going off and doing things. Well, I knew that my children were well cared for because my mother came down and looked after them. So I knew that I didn't have to worry about them. So, no, it wasn't difficult. It was fitting in the training was quite tough. Because, of course, you know, family came first and training came second. So that was the difficult bit. But actually making the decision to actually go and do the race, no, that that was quite easy, actually. I was quite excited about it, wrongly or rightly, I don't know. People might criticize me, but I think it is quite important to sort of to have something that's yours, that's outside being a mum and a wife. You know, my husband had it and my children had lots of activities and things, and I was the only one that didn't have anything that was specifically for me. So, you know, this was the beginning of my adventure.
Right, right. And it's, you know, I love that sentiment of, you know, and we all, I mean, I think we all are the same way where we need that stuff. But like you said, I mean, I don't like to speak for my wife, but I'll speak for my wife. Like sometimes I think that, you know, I try to encourage her to do that same type of thing, whether it's to go for a run, whether it's to go meet a friend for a glass of wine and to just shoot the breeze for whatever, you know, for an evening. But just, yeah, to just take care of herself and have some time for herself. And I think a lot of us struggle with that sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think that's quite important. And, you know, you've got to remember that back of, you know, 17 years ago, it wasn't normal for women to do that. You know, there were very few women who actually did what I did. So a lot of my friends, more male friends than female friends, were actually sort of quite surprised that Tim allowed, in brackets, me to do the Marathon des Sables. But, you know, I think it's been the best adventure that I sort of ever did and the best thing that has sort of ever happened. And, you know, hopefully that then goes on to my children as well. So, you know, it benefits everybody, not just me.
Right. Right. And how did the race live up to your expectation? Well, maybe back up just a step. If you can remember, obviously it's been a while and there's been a lot of things in between since then, but what were your expectations going into that first time at Marathon des Sables?
Well, for me, it was purely finishing. That's all I wanted to do. You know, it was billed as the toughest foot race on earth. And I remember sort of standing on that start line, being really excited. But actually, I went with two other friends as well. So we were a team, a female team. And I remember sort of just being sort of really excited about it, but actually quite nervous as well, because it was, you know, this was a big deal. Mm-hmm. The year that I did it, so this is 2001, there were 12 women from the UK that entered the race. Now you're talking about 40 plus women who are doing the race every year from the UK. So we're not talking worldwide, we're purely talking from the UK. So it has increased massively in terms of the females of interest and entrance and things. So my goal really for that was to finish. And it was tough. It was really, really hot. I had to have IV drips and everything else, but I did finish. And, you know, I slept with my medal for about 3 days after. I'm so excited. It was a massive achievement for me, because I think a lot of people thought, oh, you know, Mimi, she's blonde, she likes her makeup and her clothes and her shoes and everything. So, you know, there is no way on earth she's ever going to sort of, you know, finish something like the MDS. Well, I proved them all wrong, didn't I?
You did indeed. You did indeed. When you did finish, you know, was that kind of the opening of the Pandora's box for some of these long and crazy and adventurous races? I mean, was that the time when it was just like, all right, this is my thing, or were you still kind of up in the air at that point?
No, I think really what sort of kept me going on that one's when I got home, I remember sort of having a cup of coffee and I was sitting in my kitchen and my feet were really swollen. My legs were quite swollen at that stage. And I just remember thinking, you know, I was so incredibly ill during the race. And I really was ill. I'm surprised I actually got to the finish line. But I was so ill. And I just remember thinking, if I can finish what was considered at the time to be the toughest foot race on earth feeling that ill, imagine what I can do if I'm feeling 100%. And I think that for me was the turning point in which I just thought, actually, do you know, Mimi, you can do more than this. You can do better. And, you know, so I think a bit of a shock to my husband has to be, because I think he thought that, you know, let Mimi do this, you know, Mimi can go and do this and then that'll be the end of her running, you know, career. And he was quite wrong.
Yes, yeah, quite wrong. Hey, have you gone back and done MDS again, or is that just the one time?
No, just the one time. I think there are so many races out there now that I think to go back and do things sort of twice or three times, I think it's, you know, it's quite expensive. I think for me, racing is all about seeing different parts of the world and experiencing, you know, well, having new experiences and meeting new people. So I think to go back and do it again, no, it doesn't really interest me, to be quite honest with you. It's quite big now. It's quite a right. big race. And I mean, we had 600, 700 people when I did it. It's now over 1,000. And the thought of it doesn't appeal to me anymore, no.
Gotcha. You've mentioned a couple times that at the time that was really considered to be the toughest foot race out there. Without getting into all of the things that you're without, you know, trying to run through the list of everything you've done, where does it rate for you on the scale of difficult achievements? You know, is it right up there, or have you? You know, I mean, I'm going to assume that you've done some things that probably that on paper at least sound more difficult, but you know, how do you rate MDS versus some of the other things that you've done?
Well, I mean, I rate MDS sort of for me as a tough race because it was my first one, so it was my first experience of actually being out there and doing day after day after day and carrying my own kit. I've since done other races which have been longer. That doesn't necessarily make them tougher.
Right.
But I just think every race is different, isn't it? You know, you race, so you do the MDS in one way. I might do another race in a different way. They can be different distances. But each race has its own level of toughness, whether it's speed or whether it's jungle or whether it's Arctic. It doesn't matter. So, you know, but for me, MDS has always been the toughest race, not the toughest, but a tough race, because it was my first experience of ever doing anything like that. And because I was so ill, and I've never been that ill in any other race before. So in that respect, it's right up there. But in terms of racing and races, no, I don't think it's right up there.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I mean, I think that you make a very good point, and it's something that might be easy to over, you know, to gloss over, and that because it was your first race, you know, there's a whole lot of unknowns, and there's a whole lot of, you know, just it's a first time doing it. And so you don't always know how your body's going to respond. And obviously, like you said, being sick and all that kind of stuff made it even more difficult. So, you know, I think that you get to grade that one on a curve, and definitely, you know, I don't see any reason to not call it a tough race for, I mean, it's a tough race anyway, but as your first one, I think that's a pretty fair way of rating it.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. I mean, you know, it's a funny race. I think, you know, it's one of those races you can go out there as, and compete in the race and finish the race. And you can do that if you're going out there to compete and actually go for a podium place and everything. It's completely different levels. So I was never out there to do any of that because I wasn't nowhere near that sort of level. So, you know, you've really got two different types of races going on in the MDS.
Right. And well, I would make the argument that a lot of races, you have, you know, those different types of races going on, at least the big ones, where, you know, there are those that are, you know, going out to just crush it. And then there's the people that, like me and maybe like you at that time, maybe not so much now, but where it's like, you know, let's finish this thing. Let's see what we can do and give it a good effort and get to the finish line. So, it's always fun how it, you know, with our sport that you can have those two different levels of competitors on the same day on the same course, which is one of the things that I love and really makes our sport unique compared to all the other competitions that are out there.
No, I think in terms of races like that, you know, you've got the top runners coming in sort of, you know, in record time, and then you've got the back runners coming in sort of, you know, 10, 13 hours, whatever it is. And actually, they're extraordinary. You know, the effort that they put in to actually get to that finish line, and then they have very little sleep and they're getting up and they're going the next day. You know, I think it's fantastic. So, yeah. Doesn't matter whether you're a top runner or one of the back runners. Everybody, you know, I think in my books, I think everybody is fantastic.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. And you mentioned when talking about rating MDS, some of the different other conditions you've raced in. So, I mean, you know, for people that aren't aware yet, I mean, you've done Arctic Circle races, you've done obviously deserts with Marathon des Sables and others, jungles, rainforests, the whole nine. I mean, pretty much, you know, just about any climate zone that you could think of, you've run through and raced in. Are there, I mean, all of them, I'm going to make a bold assumption here, all of them have their own difficulties, but for you, is one more difficult than the other, or are they all just their own separate beasts with their own struggles that you have to overcome when you're racing in the different climate areas?
Well, I think always running in humidity is always quite difficult, but I think, you know, I take one race at a time, and, you know, you've got to be prepared. It's putting in the time, the effort, the being prepared for the particular race. So, you know, the Arctic, I'd never raced in the cold before. So, you know, I spoke to a lot of people who'd raced in the cold before. I got their knowledge, their experience. And from that, I, you know, was able to put together a really good sort of kit list of stuff that I sort of needed. And I think, you know, you're always learning, aren't you, in races? And, you know, there are always people out there who are way more knowledgeable than I am. So, you know, get their information, speak to them, chat to them. And the more information you have, the better the race will go in terms of your preparation. So, but, you know, some races you go to and, you know, I don't know anybody who's raced them before. I love doing the first race of a series. So, you know, for example, the Arctic race, I did the first year, loved it because, again, it's like an adventure. There's nobody who's done this particular race before. So there's nobody who's can give you any insight into it or can tell you that, you know, when you get to this point, Mimi, my goodness, you know, then you've got this, then you've got that. You know, you are literally arriving there and you're doing it all yourself. It's all, you know, and that to me is like an adventure. It's so exciting. And the same when I did a race in Peru, fantastic. Again, nobody had done this race before. This was the first year and it really was a proper adventure. You know, you're in areas where they do some logging, you're in other areas where most tourists can never ever go. So it's literally the locals are there. So again, a real adventure. That's what running is all about, isn't it? It's an adventure.
Oh yeah, certainly. It's certainly an adventure. Talking about being in the rainforest where it's only the locals. How do they react when you come running by? I'm assuming maybe there's some other folks as well. But I mean, is it a case of like what is going on or how, you know, is there any interaction at all, or do you just kind of see them from a distance, or how did that work out for you?
No, there was some interaction. We spent one night in one of the villages actually, and that was fantastic because they'd sort of set up. So we were all sleeping in hammocks. So we set up these hammock stations, and the locals had set up this. We went around to various houses and tried out various foods, which we didn't know whether we should actually be eating. Of course, it's self-sufficiency. So we were quite worried if we ate it that we might be disqualified. But anyway, we were allowed to do that. But it was watching, you know, how so the villagers, their local, their national costume is made out of the bark of trees. And the kids, they did these fantastic dances for us, and they produced these amazing meals, which were just sort of fish, which they put in these shells. I mean, it was just delicious. So it was wonderful, sort of listening to the history, listening to their stories and things. So that was very special. So yeah, we did interact with them at all, and it was lovely.
Gotcha. Have there been times in some of your various races that you've run where things got a little bit dangerous, a little bit sketchy as far as, you know, obviously being sick at Marathon des Sables is one thing, but I mean, you know, wildlife injuries, extreme heat, cold type of issues. Have you had any close calls on any of those fronts?
No, I've been quite lucky actually. Not really. I remember when I did a race in Colorado. And I was quite excited, actually, because we'd been given these bear bells because they said you might see some bears, Mimi, and also the spray. And so I actually covered my bell up because I thought, well, if I saw a bear, I'd actually quite like to get a photograph of it. I mean, how stupid am I? Anyway, I actually did see a bear. I was the only person on the race to actually see a bear. And I remember seeing this bear and I was so excited. And all I could think about was, okay, got to get the camera out here, got to get the camera out. And the bear just turned around and looked at me and thought, and who are you? And I legged off into the woods. And I said to them, I saw a bear today and I've got no photographic evidence at all that I saw this bear. But yes, I mean, I think in terms of danger, I can't think of anything that I've been through where it's been a life or death situation in any of the races that I've been. I mean, yes, I've been very, very cold and I've overheated, but it's never been a life or death situation. No.
You talked earlier when we were first getting started, and you were talking about going long and how it's a management situation with, you know, managing how you're feeling and you know, you didn't say it, but I'm, you know, clearly managing fuel, managing hydration, like all of those things that have to go into it over a long race, whether it's a one shot through or multiple day type of situation. How do you manage? I mean, what a terrible way to ask this question, but like, how do you manage those things? Does it come down to a lot of experience, so you know what works best for you? You know, I'm thinking for someone who's maybe thinking about doing a multi-day stage race for the first time and is trying to wrap their head around things. I know you said talk to some other folks before, which is certainly great advice, but how has it worked out for you as far as how to manage how you're feeling, manage your recovery from one day to the next, food, hydration, sleep, rest, all of those things? What it seems to be working for you? And again, it's probably going to be course specific or race specific, but just kind of overview if you could.
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of with the sort of the multi-day events, it's literally a case of, you know, you're allowed to carry, I think it's usually about 2,000 calories a day, which quite frankly isn't enough. But, you know, you need to keep your weight down in your pack and things. So for me, it's sort of trying to, and I do struggle with eating while I'm sort of racing. I just don't get hungry. So I have sort of, you know, forced myself to sort of eat. But it's when you get back into camp, it's making sure that, you know, again, you're instantly you're eating, you have a bit of a recovery drink, resting, getting yourself sorted, and then you're ready for the next day on a sort of a non-stop event. So something that's, let's say, 300 odd miles, you know, then you're having to manage your own strategy. So it's not X amount of distances every single day. You've got so many days to cover an X amount of distance. So, for example, in the Arctic, you know, we had 352 miles to cover in 8 days. So I'd never done anything in the cold before. So for me, it was a case of thinking, okay, I've got this distance to do. These are the distances between the checkpoints. If I do it on my slowest pace, this is what I could do it in. So my planning brought me in sort of, I don't know, 5.5 days. Mm. So I thought, okay, if I can do it in 5.5 or 6.5 days, then I'd be quite happy. So it's really, and I did it in just under 6 days. So it's a case of really, for something like that, is having a strategy. So don't just go out and just do it. You know, you've got to have a strategy. So think about, okay, this is what I'm going to eat during the day. When I get back into camp, you have a routine. So you get back in, you've got your water, you sit down, you sort yourself out, you get your food, get your recovery, you know, you just eat and then you put your feet up. So it's getting into a routine.
Yeah. And I think that kind of, at least as I'm hearing that, I mean, I feel like you can translate that to just about anything. You know, if you're racing a marathon or a 50K or a half marathon or whatever, you know, take that a little bit of time beforehand to come up with a strategy so you don't, you know, so you don't start too fast at a race. You talked earlier about the people that just go out and fly at the beginning of a race. And if you're not fit enough to do that, that's going to be a problem, you know? So taking the time to have a strategy, have a plan, no matter length of the race at all, I think is a good takeaway for everybody, no matter what type of distance they might be racing.
I totally agree, because everybody panics. You know, you start a race and everybody shoots off and you're thinking, oh my goodness, okay, this wasn't in my plan at all. Everybody's going way too fast. But actually, 10 kilometers down the road, you're overtaking them because mm-hmm. they've gone off too fast. You know, so it's a case of actually don't panic and worry about what everybody else is doing, because actually most of the time they probably don't have a plan. They don't have a strategy and an idea of what they want to do. You know, stick to what you know and what suits you. And actually, you know, you will overtake people and, you know, you'll get to the finish line, whereas some of those people won't.
Yeah, no, speaking as the guy who's sometimes even has the plan, but then, you know, says, oh, well, I'm feeling good, so why do I need to stick to the plan at this point? And then you go out too fast and then gets caught by the people that, you know, stuck to their plan and followed along at a consistent pace. You know, good lessons learned that I've certainly learned the hard way that, you know, just because you're feeling good at mile 5 of a marathon or an ultra or whatever, doesn't mean it's time to just throw caution to the wind and go for it. Like stick to the plan that you have already made.
Exactly. You can always push it later.
Right. What about when it comes to recovery? What have you found that works for you when you're on a multi-day race, when it's, you know, you've got, you know, however long it is, maybe it's a handful of hours, maybe it's a half of a day, whatever. But, you know, how do you make sure that the next day you're feeling as good as can possibly be felt, you know, depending on the situation and the terrain and all that kind of stuff. But how do you try to expedite the recovery process?
Well, for me, what I tend to do on a sort of multi-day thing is I'll come into camp, you know, collect the water and do things, get to my tent. I'll sort of sort my stuff out. I will go and clean myself up. I'll then start my recovery by eating. Mm. And then literally I will lie in my tent or gazebo, whatever it might be, and I will sort of put my feet up and I'll just chill and chat to people. You know, everything in my pack is sort of sorted so that before I go to bed, I know that everything is ready for the next day. So, you know, whatever I'm going to have for breakfast, it's all there and it's all ready. And my pack is basically ready for the next day, except for my sleeping bag and stuff. So it's all a case of just basically getting your food into you and putting your feet up.
Yeah, again, it comes down to having a little bit of a strategy, having a routine, and then sticking with it, which is maybe a good lesson for me to try to learn on some of these things as well, even if I'm not going to do these crazy races. But I want to kind of, I don't know if I want to shift gears so much, but I want to talk a little bit about some of these doubles that you've done, because that's crazy to me. But first, before we get to that, guys, just real quick, a reminder that today's episode is sponsored once again by Pro Compression, which is another way to kind of help speed the recovery process a little compression gear never hurt anybody when it comes to recovery. And they're offering, again, as a reminder, they're offering 40% discount on anything that you get off of the website. So head over to procompression.com, fill up your cart, and make sure you use the code DIZRUNS in the checkout, you know, spot. You know where it is, where the box is, the discount code box. DIZRUNS, all one word. I'll save you 40%, and also let them know that you heard about them here on the show. So thanks to Pro Compression for their continued support of the podcast. So for people that aren't aware, Mimi, the doubles, which basically means, as far as I know, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but it basically means that you run the race from point to point and then basically turn around and run back to, you know, from the finish line to the start line type of a situation. And you've done it with some pretty epic races. Do you have a bit of a fascination with the double? Is it something that's like, I mean, I don't know why. Why would you say, hey, let's run Badwater, but not just run it once. Like, let's run it twice, and let's, you know, start and then finish and come back to the start again. And Comrades the same way. The Spartathlon, which I had never really heard about before, but looking at it on the website, like, that's a pretty impressive little run as well. Where did this little trend of doing some doubles come for you?
Well, it's going to sound really silly, actually. I had very South African friends. I've done a couple of races in South Africa, and my friends in South Africa kept on saying, you've got to come over to South Africa and do Comrades. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was on my bucket list. I wanted to do it. And my husband turned around and said, Mimi, I'm sorry, you know, you can't go out and, you know, do Comrades, but, you know, it's 90 kilometers, whatever it was. And he said, it's too short a distance, you know, quite a lot of money. And I think he was being a bit naive, actually, about the race itself, because, of course, he'd done no research into it. So I thought, okay, if he won't let me go out and do Comrades just as a single race, then perhaps if I did the double. And I looked into it, and I contacted, there was a guy, and I can't remember his name now, Paul somebody or other, who had actually done the double. I think he was the first person to do it with somebody else. And no female had actually done the double at that stage. So I talked to him and he said, you know, it took me a long time to organise and everything. Anyway, I managed to organise the whole thing. And so I ran to the race. So I did the up run first. And again, the aim was to do it in the time. I had to do it in the 12-hour cutoff. And of course, the finish and the start and the finish for the up and the down race are totally different. So when I got to the finish of the up, I then had to get to the start of the actual race, which was the down. And I was very lucky again. I'd been given a VIP ticket to the parking, which meant that I was literally sort of, you know, just there for all the pens and to get into before the race actually started. So I did the run up in, and I can't remember this at the time now, I think it was 9 hours 40, I think I ran up in. So I was very happy with that. I then got to the start, and I was quite nervous at this stage, which is, sounds ridiculous, isn't it? Because I thought, well, okay, I've done one half, now I'm going to do the race itself, and if I don't do the race, then I've just screwed it all up, basically. And it was hard doing the double. You know, I organized with a friend to who sort of said, right, certain places, Mimi, and I wrote it down in my hand, certain checkpoints, you would have a bottle of your recovery drink or whatever it might be at these sort of certain points. And I got there and it wasn't there. And I just remember thinking, oh, no, I'm just, you know, and I had a really bad time at sort of halfway through the race. And this friend of mine just came up to me and she said, Mimi, you're doing really, really well. You're, you know, on track, you're doing fine. And I did the actual race in 10:50, I think, or 10:40. So I was very, very happy. And I was the first, you know, female to actually ever do the double. So it's not the back-to-back. So the back-to-back is when you do the down 1 year and then the up the next year. I actually did the double. So I ran to the race and then turned around and ran back.
Right, right. And I was just thinking as you started to talk about comrades, that what you said earlier about not having the desire to go back and do it again. So, I mean, this was for comrades, at least it almost makes sense for you to do the double because it gives you a chance to experience both races in one shot.
Exactly. And the up is much better than the down.
I wonder if you would still feel the same way if the up race was the actual race that the year that you were there. So you were running that one second after you'd already done the down. I wonder if it's just a case of you ran the up first this time, so you're feeling fresher. It wasn't, you know, I don't know. It's just a question you'll never have the answer to, but that's interesting.
Because actually on the down, you've got that long section of field coming into, and I always get it wrong, but anyway, you've got this really long downhill to towards the end where, you know, your quads are absolutely sort of knackered at that sort of stage. So, or knackered your quads. So it's, yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, perhaps I would have loved it the other way around as well. But I think for me, what was really lovely was that I'd read Bruce Fordyce's book about comrades before. I sadly didn't get to actually meet him before the race, but I did get to meet him and have lunch with him afterwards, a couple of months afterwards when I went back to South Africa. And so to meet the king of the race is, was quite a privilege. And, he is now sort of a good friend. So, you know, that was very special.
Yeah, certainly, certainly. Now for the portion of the show where I ask what I probably already know is an almost impossible question, but, so it's a terrible question to ask, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it anyway. If you look at all of the races, the challenges, the adventures that you've done, are there any that stand out to you as being, I don't want to say better than the other, but are there any that you're more proud of that you're like, you know, that maybe you were really worried about going into it and you're really just proud of the effort in completing it, or the world records or whatever? Are there any challenges or adventures that you've done that you just look back and go, wow, I'm really proud of myself on that day and that effort?
Well, there are three, actually, because they're all completely different. So one of them was my Arctic race, so the 352 miles, because I won it. Mm. And, you know, I still hold that record for that particular course. They've now changed the course this year. So, you know, that record still holds of 10 years later. And that for me, and my son was there as part of the crew. So that was an extraordinary race. Absolutely. And it worked. You know, it was tough, but it just sort of worked for me. The other one is my John O'Groats to Land's End world record. Because before the world record started, I had a head-on car crash. Now, thankfully, you know, I was fine. I had a lot of whiplash and things. But, you know, I really worried that perhaps I wouldn't be able to actually make the start line of that event. And that was hard work. I mean, that I don't think I've ever worked so hard in my entire life to get a record. You know, I was stopped by police and various other things. And so, yeah, very, very proud of that. And my team who looked after me. And I think in terms of speed, bear in mind, I'm not a speed racer. I entered the Spartathlon in 2011. Now, the Spartathlon is a 153-mile non-stop race from Athens in Greece to Sparta. And there are 74 checkpoints, and each of the checkpoints has its own cutoff. Mm. So you arrive at the checkpoint, and it tells you how far to the next checkpoint and what the cutoff is. So you're constantly chasing time. And the whole race has to be done in under 36 hours or 36 hours. And I entered it, and I remember meeting the guy who originally set the race up, who sadly now passed away. And he said to me, I think it was 2004, he said, Mimi, you must go and do this race. I said, John, you have got to be joking. I said, this is way too fast. I said, there is no way I can do a race like that. Absolutely no way at all. He said, no, of course you can. Anyway, it was a few years later, 2000, and I think it was 11, I think I did it the first time. And I thought, well, Mimi, you know, if you don't enter it now, I'd qualified. And I thought, if you don't enter it now, you're going to be far too old and crotchety to sort of, you know, ever sort of do this. So, you know, get off your backside and actually sort of, you know, go and do it. And my whole purpose of it, I just wanted to finish. I wasn't out there to podium or do anything. I wanted to finish. And I remember getting to, I think it was the halfway point or something, and my guys, you know, said to me, Mimi, right, you're second female. I said, Dips is stupid. Of course I'm not. No, you are second female. So the next morning, going into this, yeah, so the second day, I was still second female. And then suddenly, literally, this within 5 minutes, I went from second female to fourth female. This Japanese lady, this Hungarian lady, overtook me. And I remember thinking, okay, competitive hat is now going on. There is no way I'm going from second to fourth. And so I managed to keep up with this lovely Hungarian lady, and the Japanese lady, she just went off like a bullet. So I thought, no, Mimi, don't chase her. And eventually I overtook her. Fantastic. I remember it was that moment when you overtake somebody in a race and you think, actually, I'm feeling quite good now. You're feeling quite smart, aren't you? And you overtake somebody again, you think, okay. And that gives you a bit of a, and I just thought, now she is not going to overtake me again. And I managed to podium. I got third female. And that for me was, in terms of a race that is one of the most iconic races in the ultra running world, was fantastic. And to achieve podium, third female, I tell you, I was ecstatic. So three completely different races, three completely different sort of, you know, outcomes. But my goodness, I'm proud of all three of them.
That's fantastic. And I certainly am of the thought that everybody should be proud of every finish, but there's always those couple of races that stand out for whatever reason. And I'm glad that you had a couple, cause I was worried that might be a pretty dead end question. So I'm glad that we hit on something there that was good. Shifting gears to the future, although, by the time this show comes out, it's going to be even closer to the future. This will be out towards the end of August. Obviously everybody listening to it knows that, but it was recording as a few weeks early. You're getting ready to do a little run across the US. What's going on there? Where are you going from? And is there a cause? What's the route? What's going on here in the US?
Okay, so I was actually supposed to do this a year ago.
Okay.
But I had to have a knee operation, so I had to postpone it. But on the 7th of September of this year, I will be starting in Los Angeles at the City Hall, and I hopefully, all going well, will be finishing at New York City Hall in order to try and break a new female world record from running from LA to New York. So my route is 2,850 miles. And I'm aiming to do it in 53 days.
That's I don't know. I mean, it's not like anything that you've done makes me go, oh, like that's no big deal. But is this the longest consecutive back to back days type of thing that you've done?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I've done South Africa, so I've run across South Africa, but that was 32 days. So yeah, no, this is, and I think because you're chasing the clock, you know. So, you know, I've got a certain amount of miles I need to do every single day. The body, it takes about two and a half weeks for the body to actually get used to running that distance every single day. I'm going to be knackered. Every morning I'm going to wake up and it might be my calf one day that's hurt. It might be my quads. It might be my knees. It might be my whole body. But you just sort of switch off from that and just, you've got to constantly move forward. It's going to be hard. It really is. It's going to be very, very hard, but I'm quite excited about it. I am, you know, I've wanted to do this since 2011, but you know, you can imagine it's quite an expensive, world record to do.
I was just gonna say, certainly the expense plays a part. I mean, you just said you're excited, which was kind of, you know, going to be the question, but is there an area, I'm sure with planning and strategizing and getting ready for this, you've kind of looked at the map and kind of figured out what, you know, I'm sure you know exactly what the route is going to be and whatnot. Are there portions of the route that you're nervous about, or is it all just going to be, you know, just that continual slog of, all right, do this next day, do it the next day. Are there, I guess I'll just bracket up to that first question. Are there other portions of it that you're more nervous about than others?
I mean, I think the most difficult part is, well, everybody always says actually that the most difficult part is always going through Colorado. Mm. You know, the first day getting out of LA is, you know, that's going to be hard. Sounds stupid, doesn't it? But LA is massive, mm-hmm. absolutely massive. So you're looking at 60 miles just to get out of LA. But I think everybody always says that, you know, Colorado is tough because obviously you've got the altitude and stuff. But actually, as you head towards New York, you've then got Pennsylvania. It is very hilly there. Mm-hmm. You know, so you've got Colorado at the beginning. You've got the desert section, which is going to be hot during the day. Mm-hmm. You've got Colorado. And then you've got this lovely flat section in between. So you then get used to running on the flat. And then suddenly, oh, whoop-de-doo, lots of little hills or big hills coming up constantly. So the great thing, I think, about America is that it's such a vast, I mean, it's such an extraordinary country, and it is so diverse in, you know, all the different areas that I'm going to be running through. So actually each day is going to be like a little mini adventure, isn't it? Really, however painful it becomes, it is going to be a mini adventure.
Yeah, it certainly will. Although I think you'd get some of us here in the States to say that there's going to be some days where that adventure is going to span out for a while. Like when you're going across, like Kansas or Nebraska, some of those states that are a little bit flat. And although depending on where you're going, I mean, I've driven across Kansas before. I have no desire to run across it, but I've driven across it, and it's not as flat as you think. Like it's got some rolling hills too. So there's always going to be those little twists in the plan, and like, oh, I didn't realize that there was going to be a hill here, or that there was going to be this year or that year. And obviously on foot, you get to really experience that firsthand. So it'll be an adventure. Are there ways that we can follow along? Is there a website or is there going to be information on the website about the run once it kicks off?
Yeah, no, my website is going live on Monday. So the 7th of August. So it is www.mimirunsusa.com. And on there will be my tracker, because I'm doing a world record, I have to be tracked. So mm-hmm. I have a tracker. My Strava stuff will be put up there, you know, so all the information you need. If people want to come and run with me, they can find out where I am and come and run with me, you know. So it's all, I'm trying to do everything. So, you know, because there have been various people who have run across America recently and they've cheated. So I have to have everything above board and easy access, basically. So if anybody wants to come and run with me, that would be absolutely fantastic. As long as they're not expecting me to sprint because I'm running very fast.
Right.
But I'm so excited because, you know, you meet so many different people, don't you, doing this sort of run? You know, you'll meet some extraordinary, marvelous people. And, you know, and I think that's all part of the adventure, isn't it? So it's not just about me running across America. It's all the people that I'm going to meet along the way and the team of people who are looking after me. So if I didn't have the team of people supporting me, actually, I couldn't run across America. So, you know, it's teamwork.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And it's times like these. I talked to Maggie Seymour a few weeks ago, who just started her trip from San Diego to Virginia. She's running across the country just a little bit south of where you are. I talked to her a few weeks ago, and it's the same type of thing. She's got her stuff on the website, and you can jump on and run with her and see where she is. But it always just irks me because I'm down here in Central Florida, where nobody that's running coast to coast is ever going to run through probably ever through Florida, but certainly not far enough south where I am. So it's always a bummer that I'm not in that area where maybe I could jump on with somebody and get some miles. But certainly we'll make sure to link up in the show notes for people to be able to check that out and hopefully maybe get a few miles with you or a few hours with you or whatever the case may be, whatever their schedule allows to share some time with you.
Yeah, no, that'd be really nice, actually, because I think, you know, it is going to be tough. You know, I'm not underestimating this challenge at all. It is going to be one of the toughest challenges I've ever done. But I do know that, you know, barring injury or whatever it is, I am capable of doing it. So, you know, it's one day at a time, no further than that. So
certainly. So as we're getting close to wrapping up here, Mimi, I'm going to ask another possibly impossible question. I usually end up with something I call a philosophical question. I'm going to go a little bit off script today and ask you a predict the future question, which are always just, you know, a crapshoot anyway. But you know, you've been doing this for 16, 17 years now, continuing to push, continuing to find new adventures and you know, do bigger and some might say crazier things. How much longer? Is there any thoughts in your mind of shutting it down and not doing as many or not going out on any of these crazy adventures? Or are you just going to keep right on going as long as you can?
Well, I've always said that as long as I'm enjoying it, I will keep on going. My husband is fantastic because actually Tim comes and crews for me now. Mm-hmm. So he supports me. He said to me, he says, Mimi, the only way I ever get a holiday is to support you. So the answer is no, I don't want to give up. I don't want to give up. Whether I will continue doing sort of the really, really long stuff, I don't know. At the moment, I can't get my head around anything other than running across America because that has taken so much, you know, energy in terms of, you know, just the planning, the logistics, the fundraising, all of that, and my charities and things. So I'm concentrating on that. And then once that's over and I've recovered from that, then I will think of something else to do. The answer is, yeah, I want to keep on running. I think it's a great way, even if I'm running locally, you know, just going around the footpaths and going, where does that road go? Where does that trail go? Where does that go? It's all exciting. You never see it in a car, do you? So that's why running is so exciting. It's because you just don't know what is around the corner.
Mm, yeah, that's I totally agree. And that's a perfect place to put a bow on things. So again, guys, if you want to check out what Mimi's got going on, MarvelousMimi.com is the website. Again, two L's under Marvelous, and on Instagram and Twitter, it's the same handle both places, Marvelous Mimi, both places to check along there. And one more time, Mimi, I didn't write down but it's Mimi Runs US. Or give me the URL for the race or for the trip across the United States one more time.
Yeah, it's at MimiRunsUSA.com.
Okay, MimiRunsUSA.com. And again, we'll have that stuff all linked up. You don't have to remember it right now, folks, but just wanted to get it in your ears one more time. But DizRuns.com/455 will be the show notes for this episode. So we'll have everything linked up there. And by the time you're hearing this, that website will already be live, and we'll just be within, I think, about a week and a half or 2 weeks from her taking off from L.A. So check it out. And if you're along that route, please come out and join Mimi for a few miles and help her have something to talk about or something to take her mind off of what she's doing and distract her from the process. Please. Yes, yes. So, Mimi, thank you so much for taking the time today. Obviously, nothing but the best on your run across the United States. Hopefully, everything goes smoothly and you have another world record to hang your hat on when it's all said and done. So, good luck. Certainly looking forward to staying in touch and we'll be cheering for you as you go. So, thanks for the time and nothing but the best.
That's very kind. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation between Mimi and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know what it was from this episode that stood out. What was your big takeaway? For me, I actually had a few things. I made a couple of notes, and of course, they all kind of came back to me again as well when I was going back through and editing and prepping the show to get it ready. But the one that I think I'm going to go with is... When I was talking with Mimi about, you know, how much longer is she going to keep doing this? How much longer is she going to keep pushing herself and finding new challenges and going, you know, going to the extreme, if you will. And her response really stuck out to me when she said, you know, she'll stop when she's not having fun anymore. And I think that for me, sometimes it's easy to lose sight of the fact that, you know, why do I run? Ultimately, I run because I enjoy it. You know, I enjoy the process. I enjoy the challenge. I enjoy pushing myself. It's fun. Yes, sometimes I get too bogged down in the stats, in the in the times. How fast was the race? How far did I go? What was the mileage for the week? How did I do in the workouts? And when I do that, it's easy to kind of lose sight of the bigger picture and just the fact that it's fun, that I enjoy it. So, I just love that idea that at her level, doing some of the extreme runs, the epic adventures, the things that she's doing, ultimately, the reason she's still doing it and trying these different things, trying to run across the United States in a pretty fast pace, to break the record, like why? It's fun. It's fun. It's a great thing to remember in all areas of life, but especially in the things that we do for leisure. And running is certainly one of those things for just about all of us. So, as long as it stays fun, keep on keeping on. And if it stops being fun, if it stops bringing you joy, if it starts to become onerous, and this is me talking to myself, trying to give my own self this advice, that's when it's time to either, take a little break, maybe find something different and see if, that itch to do it again doesn't come back. So, yeah, at least for me, something that was a good takeaway, something that I needed to hear and be reminded of and really appreciate that's where Mimi is with her running, that she does it because she still enjoys it. And that's something for all of us to continue to strive for. So that was my takeaway. What was yours? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/455. And leave a comment there. And that way everyone else can see what you had to say, see what your thoughts were, and we can... maybe get a little discussion going in the on the website, on the blog post for this episode. So that is it for today. Thanks once again to Pro Compression for their continued support of the podcast. Much appreciated. And you can show your appreciation to them and get yourself some good compression gear, whatever it might be, by going to procompression.com and make sure you use the code DIZRUNS, all one word, at checkout to save 40%, 40, pretty good discount. And if you use it, if you've used it in the past or if you use it going forward, let me know. Shoot me a tweet or an email or whatever. Let me know that you used it and let me know what you got. I always appreciate y'all supporting the sponsors that support the show. It's everybody wins in that type of situation. So I appreciate you guys that have done that in the past. So at this point, nothing left to say, right? Let's put a bow on this thing. Thanks for listening, guys. Hope you have a great rest of the day and certainly looking forward to talking to you again soon. Until then, take care, guys.